I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Today on the show, one man's maniacal pursuit of a 60-pound rockfish and his experience with the black market fishing industry. Jeff Nichols has had an interesting life, to say the least. A child of privilege, a teacher, a writer, a stand-up comedian, author of a self-deprecating memoir made into a movie, sport fishing charter boat captain, and hardcore fishing addict. Jeff Nichols became so obsessed with catching a huge rockfish, known as striped bass in his native New York, that in the process he became part of the illicit rockfish market that provided fresh fillets to restaurants on the East Coast. It was great until he got caught. In fact, Caught is the title of Jeff Nichols' book. He joins us after the news from NPR. Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us and making Midday part of your day. The 2014 Maryland rockfish season opened on Saturday. It's an annual rite of spring in Maryland. The pursuit of the fish known as rockfish or rock, and everywhere else as stripers or striped bass. During the trophy season that runs through May 15th, anglers are allowed to catch one striper per day, measuring a minimum of 28 inches in the main stem of the Chesapeake Bay from Brewerton Channel to the Maryland-Virginia line and in Tangier and Pocomoke Sounds. The record for a striped bass or rockfish caught from the Chesapeake Bay is 67 pounds, 8 ounces. That fish was caught in 1995. Young rockfish spend up to 5 years in the bay before they go back to the Atlantic Ocean, where they can live up to 30 years. The striped bass is the official fish of the state of Maryland. Known for its size and ability to put up a good fight, the striped bass is considered by many to be the premier sport fish on the bay, and maybe the entire Northeast coast. A migratory fish, it's pursued by fishermen up to New England in the summer. Jeff Nichols met the rockfish, or striper, in its feeding grounds off Montauk on the Point of Long Island. Montauk is affectionately known as a quiet little drinking village with a fishing problem. At least that's how Jeff originally knew the place. Eventually, Montauk came to represent greed and abuse to him, and he'll tell us why during this hour of Midday. At different times in his life, Jeff Nichols has been a teacher, a writer, a stand-up comedian, author of a self-deprecating memoir called Trainwreck that was made into a movie, sport fishing charter boat captain, and hardcore fishing addict. Jeff Nichols became obsessed with catching a huge rockfish or striper and in the process had some experiences with the illicit rockfish market that provided fresh fish to restaurants on the East Coast. It was great until he got caught. In fact, Caught is the title of Jeff's book, One Man's Maniacal Pursuit of a 60-pound Striper and His Experience with the Black Market Fishing Industry. Jeff Nichols, welcome to Midday. It's nice to have you with us.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Dan.
When I mentioned the record for the Chesapeake Bay for a rockfish or a striper, 67 pounds, 8 ounces, did you get a little excited when I mentioned that?
Yeah, it always gets. You know, I'm a trophy hunter. I've always been ingrained in it. Since a kid, I caught a 6.5-pound brown trout through the ice, ice fishing, and a hook jaw. And then ever since then, I got it mounted. So it's kind of got ingrained in me at an early age. The actual world record was caught 2 years ago by Greg Meyerson, an 81-pounder, I think. But that's off Connecticut.
81 pounds off in the Sound
it's
off Connecticut.
Fish.
Wow.
Yeah, right by right between Orient and the and Connecticut.
How did you, and I'm going to use the pun hooked, I got to use it. How did you get hooked on fishing for stripers and fishing for a big striper?
Well, I had an enchanted childhood, luckily. I grew up my grandfather had a house off Cape Cod in Harwichport, and he always wanted me to go to sailing school down at like the yacht club, and I was drawn by like an unforeseen hand down to the piers, you know, and it was kind of a, it was so great. I don't know what it was. We all have these Kodiak moments when we were, you know, these phenomenal moments when we were kids that something happens where it affects us. And it was, for me, it was just the smell. I don't even know, it was a parking lot, you know, with a bunch of old fish heads around and maybe the gas, the oil from the pavement or mm-hmm. the the guts and the boats and the ropes and the big balls and our commercial boats, and that was exciting to me. And my parents didn't want me to go down there. Then I started hanging out with the boats when they came down,
And you would see the catch?
I'd see the catch. They're great. And tons of striped bass. And they take the striped bass and they pull up with pickup trucks and they load them into the trucks. And they're all so happy, these guys. And this was before regulations. This was before there was no regulations. There was no DEC, Department of, you know, it was kind of, you know, you were able to sell what you wanted to. It was a free market, free enterprise. And so I saw this exposure. They'd load up the trucks, and this is 1976.
Okay.
The height of striped bass, it was great. It had tons of fish around. They would drive these fish to the and sometimes the captains would bring me along to the restaurants, and you'd see them selling, and it was commerce, and it was fun. So I kind of had that great attitude about it. Then I'd see the charter boat captains coming in, and this one captain, Bob, I kept showing up every day, and I was a young kid. I was 10. You know, so he finally said, look, can you bring me out? And so I asked my mom, and then he asked the charter if I could come along, an extra guy. And the nice people let me come. And I think if it wasn't the foggy day, and that probably made it stick out of my mind so much, because we came around. It's a long ride to get around Nantucket from Cape. Must be 30 miles and around to the shoals, all the way to the other side of Nantucket.
Right.
It was foggy, and these guys were on wire line. Were using something called a hoochie, now they have umbrella rigs, but it was called a hoochie. It was kind of a squid looking rig. And,
okay.
Someone else came across and invented this umbrella rig system that blew it away, but he had all these skirts and stuff that he'd put on it, and it was. I remember watching the other boats coming in out as a fog, because they didn't have radio. Think about it; they had no Loran, no GPS. Look at all the tricks we have now. I'm a ham and egger. I don't know what I'm doing. I got my captain's license out of a Cracker Jack box. You know, I when I got my captain's license, I didn't know how to back up a boat. Literally, I mean, I smashed into everything I could see. But
back then, the captains probably spotted something on land, and they knew. This was a spot to fish.
But it was foggy.
They didn't have their numbers, longitude,
they were
latitude.
Just starting to get Loran, but it was this huge machine. But they didn't have GPS, and I don't think they were even using, they didn't have radar on the boats. They didn't have radar.
So your experience goes all the way back to the age of 10.
Right. So it's foggy out.
Yeah.
So the boat's around, and all of a sudden they start catching these bass, and they're all about 25 to 35 pounds, and they're having a blast. But every once in a while, you'd see another boat come out of the mist, you know, and then fade off. So it was just idyllic. So finally, they gave me a shot at it, and I had one on. I'm reeling it with wire line. I'm reeling it in, and right at the boat, the hook pulled, and I watched this big bass drop back, you know, and that was it. And that's when I knew.
I want to catch him next time.
I want to get a bigger one, you know, I got caught up in that whole world of trophy hunting. Just like, look, we all grew up watching, you know, look at Hemingway. We'd see Hemingway with these, you know, that great picture, idyllic picture of Hemingway looking so cool down in wherever he was.
Key West.
Or Havana. Mm-hmm. And he'd have three blue marlin behind him or three giant tuna. But back then, giant tuna had no value.
So you were turned on by this idea of the big trophy fish.
Right. But exactly. It had to be trophies. We all were. But,
when did this start, though? When did your Montauk experience start?
With Hemingway, those fish, there was no Japanese sushi. There was no market for it, so they just threw them into the dumpster, you know.
Right.
So that was ingrained in me. But I always thought the bigger fish, the better. I mean, that's, if you take that out of recreational fishing, what do we have? You know, that's the heart and soul of the bigger the fish. Now, I know you're a freshwater guy.
I mentioned that before the show.
Yeah.
I do catch and release. I don't care about the trophy that
good.
Much.
Yeah.
At least having it on my wall.
Right, yeah.
But you and these other guys who chase these big fish, that's what this is about. But you grew up in Manhattan, right?
Yeah.
So how did you end up on Montauk? That's my next question.
Okay, so this is it. So now...
And how old were you then?
Okay, so what happens is I've always liked fishing. I've always, first of all, I've changed my ways. I'm against trophy hunting now. I'm for catch and release. I wrote a book, did an incredible book. I'm a little rushed. I took Megabus down here. That shows how much money I make off self-published books. I took a Megabus 5.5 hours down here, and they drop you off 30 miles out of the city somehow.
I wish I had known you were coming. We would have sent a driver for you. No. But your first book, Train Wreck, that
I
mentioned.
Yeah. Okay,
right?
Yeah. So I always liked fishing. I'd fish along the Hudson River, but it's important to note, in 1978, all these striped bass was incredible. Let me show you how quickly a fishery can crash. By 1981... or 82, you could not catch a striped bass. They were gone completely. So once you put a dollar sign on a resource, they get wiped out. How do they get wiped out? By charter boats, but also by commercial interest nets. Like you've had problems down here in the Chesapeake. I mean, someone, 3 years ago found 3 tons of fish in one illegally submerged gill.
We've had a big poaching problem in recent years, right. But the period you're talking about is when the fishery collapsed.
Yeah, it collapsed.
And they put a moratorium in place.
Yeah, so look at my timing, exactly. Right. So I'm now, during this time, I'm trying to be a stand-up comic and struggling, not doing that great. But memoirs were selling, okay? And I'm going to try to pull this all together, but memoirs were selling. So I'm like, you know what? I was on a road a lot doing stand-up comedy. So I'm like, I'll try to write, this guy David Eggers wrote a big memoir, heartbreaking tale of a staggering, you know, and Angela's Ashes had just come out, so with Frank McCourt, you know, right. And he sold 5. So I'm like, I'm gonna try writing my story, my because I was a special ed kid my whole life. I was always in special ed, and that's why I got addicted to trophy fishing, because I wasn't a good athlete. I was a real spaz, and I never, you know, I was in special ed. And so when I could catch these big fish, that kind of distinguished me. I got on the cover of, you know, the 6.5-pounder. I was in a magazine. Mm-hmm. But there weren't many fish around. I used to fish with the river rats on East River. I'd go around, but these guys knew how to cast out far. So that's when the Hudson River, thanks to the Clean Air Act, was coming back. And Pete's, God bless him, he just died,
Pete,
right?
Pete Seeger,
yeah, just died. Great, on the Clearwater. So it was coming back. It is such a remarkable story what happened. This whole time I was doing stand-up, I wasn't really fishing that much. And if I had read this book by Dick Russell, it's called Striper Wars. Here I am on here, supposed to be pitching my book. I'm pitching Dick Russell's book, but it's worth it. It's really a must-read. People say my book, Caught, is a must-read. Dick Russell's book should be mandatory reading for anyone who picks up a rod, because it's the only success story in saving a migration of fish. It's the only, we haven't done it with cod. Cod's never come back, no matter what kind of moratoriums we put on them. It just doesn't regenerate. And the salmon's had all kinds of problems. This striped bass story, and I'll just summarize what really happened. And so there's no fish. The commercial guys still wanted to catch fish, right?
I remember.
They still, and there weren't many fish around, but they still wanted, even if they could make $10. And a recreational guy still wanted to sell bait. So they were like, oh, there's still fish around. There's a mailman named Jim White, right, in Rhode Island. He goes, this is absurd. Tough guy, Vietnam vet, tough guy. He goes, this is insane. These fish are facing on a brink of extinction. This is 1983 in Rhode Island. But he's a mailman. But this is a great example of how a grassroots pedestrian, you know, forget government, but pedestrian effort. So he happens to be on a congresswoman named Claudia Sherman's mail route. It happens to be. If this didn't happen, serendipitously, good word for a learning disabled kid. I Googled it. No, if he wasn't on this route, so he got her attention. He goes, look, these fish are white. And striped bass is a very important fish. I mean, without striped bass, you could argue there'd be no America. I mean, striped bass helped the pilgrims remarkably, the whole commerce trade, salted. They used it to fertilize crops. That was a big thing before. But then, and codfish, salted cod, you wouldn't have the slave trade, so these fish are very historically important. If there wasn't a bald eagle, they'd be the striped bass. The striped bass is on more courthouse walls than any other fish. Not that there are any other fish on courthouse walls. But.
So this moratorium went into place in Maryland, Virginia, on the East Coast,
right.
and it worked.
Well, one state happened in Rhode Island first, and then other states caught on, and then it became a federal thing because Claudia Sherman got in touch with a guy in the state senate, a senator. I'm forgetting his name.
That's all right. But we know the story here in Maryland, too.
Yeah.
That was very important to the fishery coming back. In fact, when the rockfish came back, they came back in big numbers, and they had a big appetite.
Sure.
And they started eating lots of other things, including crabs.
Well, that's a big issue, too. That's the problem. It's such a when you talk about any kind of ecosystem and man playing a role in it, you know, that's an issue. I mean, all of a sudden the flounder disappeared and fluke started, you know, so they can eat. They're voracious eaters. So maybe at one point, they came back too strong, you know.
So you ended up on Montauk about what year? Because we're going to take a break here
and then pick
up the story. When did you get out there?
I'm fishing the East River 12 hours a day, not catching any fish. Somehow I sell my book. My memoir gets picked up by Hollywood.
Trainwreck.
And it was made, was a self-published book, by the way. Self-published.
Made into a movie.
I sent it with typos and all to Lionsgate Film. Some small agent saw it. I get a check in the mail for $75,000 as option money. My first thought is I'm going to Montauk because that's where the fish are. And it happened to be in 2001 when the brink, because of the moratorium, because they took commercial fishing nets off the they banned commercial fishing nets right. mostly. And
the stripers were coming back.
They were coming back incredibly, remarkably. So by the time, so that's the coincidence. So that's a good way to end it. So I collide. I hit Montauk when striped bass was at its pinnacle. And I spent 10 years out there.
Montauk,
tip of Long Island.
Quiet little drinking village with a fishing problem. And that's what Jeff Nichols had during this period that he covers in his book, Caught, One Man's Maniacal Pursuit of a 60-Pound Striped Bass. Do you hear me say striped?
Yeah, because you
I grew up saying that in Massachusetts. Yeah. One man's maniacal pursuit of a 60-pound striped bass and his experiences with the black market fishing industry, which we'll get into in this hour with Jeff Nichols. A short break at midday. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Roderick's here, joined this hour by Jeff Nichols, the charter boat captain in Long Island, New York, and his book, Caught, One Man's Maniacal Pursuit of a 60-Pound Striped Bass and His Experiences with the Black Market Fishing Industry. Striped bass, also known in Maryland, of course, as the rockfish or rock. Now, Montauk, Long Island, out there on the tip of Long Island, it's a very busy place for commercial fishermen, for sport fishermen, and that's because the striped bass, they run past there a lot in the summertime, right, Jeff? That's why is that such a good fishing location?
Well, you know, it's kind of like you could almost use the Cape of Good Hope as an example. It's huge currents, and fish, they're striped bass are an ambush fish, so there are a lot of rocks where the current gets pushed. It goes from 20 feet to, it goes from, say, 40 feet to 20 feet on these shoals, and that's where the striped bass like to sit on the other side. They're kind of lazy. They'll wait for the bait fish to get pulled across because of the strong rip current and in the rips, mm-hmm. and they'll just wait and they're ambush fish, so they'll wait. So what happens is the bait fish will get disorientated when it hits it. Is it disoriented or disoriented?
Disoriented.
Is that right?
Either,
I always can get
I'm
confused.
Sorry, I'm not.
I was in special ed. Don't ask me. So. I'm hooked on phonics. So the fish would get disoriented and it would be easy prey for the. So all this water is getting pushed around a corner of Long Island, from Long Island around a corner towards Connecticut, and that's where these big currents are, and the fish like to feed there.
Yes, and it's an amazing sight when the stripers run into the bait fish. It's kind of shocking, isn't it?
In the fall migration, it's amazing. Yeah. When you get the surface.
So you had an option money from the rights of your first book, Trainwreck.
Right, yeah.
A self-published book that was made into a Hollywood movie.
Right, it was based on I wrote about how I was forced to exist in the confines of special ed. I went to a special ed boarding school when I was in seventh grade. And it was, the movie stars Sean William Scott.
It's American Loser, right?
It was called Trainwreck, and they switched it around. Originally, I was going to get a big budget. They had Ben Affleck. Then they had Greg Kinnear. They had all these big actors attached. But I learned a lot about Hollywood. All of a sudden, because the agents, when they want to do a movie with Lionsgate, so those agents will say anything. They're like, our client loves it. Stella loves this movie. We're going to get stuff. So then, because they want to work with, there's actually the production company called This and That Productions. They did 21 Grams. They won a bunch of Brokeback Mountain. So it was a big production company behind it that I got luckily affiliated. It was complete luck, you know. So,
right. But it ended up being a smaller budget film.
Small, but yeah. So,
still,
yeah, so
nonetheless,
it got reduced.
But Jeff Nichols, you had the money, and you wanted to become a degenerate rock fisherman, right?
Well, this is how it happened, right? Let me explain how it happened.
Before we go there, I just want to mention in the foreword of your book, or the first chapter, actually, you talk about how you're not the only one who goes through this experience. Yeah. Men in particular who get obsessed with catching these fish, large fish. They invest a lot of money in boats. They invest a lot of time in fishing, so much so that they end up in personal bankruptcy even in some cases and get divorced as a result of their obsession with this kind of fishing, right?
They go over the top. They can take their child's that people have taken their child's college tuition funds and doubled it down on a shark tournament or a tuna tournament or a striped bass tournament. You can get and you get addicted to equipment. It's like that Tim Allen. Remember, he's like, "Ooh, remember Tim Allen show?" You could get a new GPS costs $5,000, and you see or more radar systems $10,000. You get caught up in it. Yeah, it's the ego that
and
gets
was that
involved.
You? Did well, that you, become you?
I spent
did
everything.
Did you become that?
I did everything I could to catch big fish. Yeah, you know. Can I say what one of the chapters of my book was? I originally was going to call my book "Big Fish, Little Dick." That was in the title, and that's one of is that overboard? I should have said
that's fine. Okay, keep going.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the chapters, but because it was
give people an idea of how obsessed you became with this.
Well, the time again was 2001, and so I show up at so I'm just walking down the docks one time, and I see these guys with these huge striped bass again. So I'm like, this is good, and so I buy a boat right away, and I get out there, and I the learning curve was so strong. I didn't know how to back the thing up. I'm a New York City guy. I used to fish off the shore. Mm-hmm. I'm the first thing I do is smash into two boats, right? I spent about $15,000 on a small little outboard engine boat, which are bad. Now they're 4-stroke engines with a 2-stroke, a real gas polluting, terrible boat. But now they've come a long way. Minimizing this CO2 pollution, but I go out there. Now, what happens is you want to catch fish on a full moon because that's when the tide is the strongest and that pulls the most bait fish out of the estuaries and gets them and the big fish make mistakes during the full moon. So, but I didn't realize that as the moon gets stronger during the tide period is 6 hours. So at 2 hours in, the tide's not that strong, but 3 hours in, it's ripping and you get a huge. You get these huge rip tides where you get a huge following sea, and they're it's like a wall of water. So me and my friends would be out there, and someone told me the big fish are right in the middle of the hardest part of the rip, which isn't true. That no one see in Montauk when you show up there, no one's going to give you any information on how to catch big fish. They'll tell you the town drunk might come up and bum a cigarette off you, but you're not going to get you're not going to get the. So they told
because
me
because it's so competitive.
It's so competitive. Yeah, no one wants to tell you anything. So they told me to go right in the middle of the rip. So I'd have my friend literally. We put life jackets on. There would be I'm telling you a wall, a white water wall, right in the middle of 7 feet waves breaking. I'd have him steer the boat right in, and I'd go and I'd take a live eel and put it off the back, and we take on probably 100 gallons every time we go through it. Luckily the bilge pumps works, and one time running back through with the following sea we took a wave. I got scared. I looked back, there was a huge wave behind me. I got scared. I didn't know what to do. I put it in neutral, and a wave just shoved us for probably 50 yards, and we were almost swamped. We were on the side, and my friend was luckily a heavy guy, so he got on. It was like a sunfish. You know how the sunfish flips? This is a 25-foot boat. He gets on the side, starts leaning, rocking. The water was 60 degrees, no boats near us at night. We would have been dead. It flipped back over, and thank God, and I was smart enough to turn back into the waves.
Did you eventually learn how to do this the right way?
Oh, yeah, now I'm a captain. I mean, I spent, I started fishing. This is all I did. I got more money. I got another $150,000 because then my book got picked up by Simon Schuster. So I got more money. So I took all the, I bought another boat. I bought a, I had a place to live out there, and all I did was fish, and no one's fished more. Probably no one's caught more 40-pound striped bass than me either. I mean, now I'm not proud of that.
You fished for yourself.
I guess I am proud of
you
that.
You fished for yourself. You weren't a charter boat.
No, not that at all. I know, and I didn't know there was money in it either. I didn't know that. This is when I turned to evil. Ready? I'm walking down the dock one time, and there's a young guy there, cool guy, because he didn't a real commercial guy, like a real. He wasn't a typical. I want to point out that. This is uncommon in Montauk. There's strong regulations out there. Most of the charter boats play by the rules. There's not a big black market. That's a mistake. You know, I put this in the title, his experience with the black market, because I knew I'd get a lot of press from it. You know,
But it's been in the news a lot too, including
sure.
Here in Maryland. We've had
an
a poaching
issue.
Problem.
Oh, no, it's an issue.
It's actually
no,
become a federal case here.
Sure. Yeah.
So tell us about this guy you met. Tell us.
Oh, so I meet this guy. And he's great. He's just a typical tough old. You know, he. This guy, and it's sad because they're really become endangered species. This guy was a typical. All he did was commercial fish. He worked on draggers. He was a clammer. He did whatever he had to do to make money. But this market is. But these commercial guys have been overregulated by bureaucrats that don't really understand the fishery management. They're in Washington and they don't. They put restrictive limits on fish when it's not necessary and. when it is necessary to goof. They're not. They've made a lot of bad mistakes. The only success story has been the striped bass, really. But they, I mean, for instance, commercial group.
So stick with this guy. Okay. Tell us about the guy and what did he want you to do?
So he goes. You know, I heard you catch a lot of fish. So I'm walking by with a 30-pound striped bass, about an average size fish there.
Legally caught.
He goes, you know, boom. He goes like this. He goes, you know, that's $100 in your hand right there. That's what he tells me, right? So did he
translate that for you? Meaning, if I take that to a restaurant in New York City,
yeah,
you can get $100 for it.
He didn't really say that clearly, but he's like, you should sell those fish, you know. And at this time, I was not. I got a lot of gruff. I mean, you got to take my word for it. I never fished over my limit. People probably don't believe me, but that's fine. I'm fine with. I know what I did. The people that fish with me, I fish with cops. I mean, I've been fishing out there for 10 years.
What were you going to do with a 30 or 35 pound striper? What would you do? Eat it?
Oh, I would have probably, at the time, well, I wasn't that good at it. This was in 03, so
if you kept one, though, Jeff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
35
pounder. I was giving it to my, I had a lot of friends out there. I'd give it to the Bulgarian friends I knew. I'd give it away. I'd carve it up and give it away. But right. I didn't know what I was doing, so I wasn't catching that many.
So when this guy said you could get $100 for that fish in your hand.
He goes, come with me, I'll show you what to do. So he comes out. So he goes, listen, I have these things called tags, commercial, where you put tags in, and I'll show you how to commercial fish. So I'm thinking, I'm just going to learn the business. I want to learn as much as I can, so I'm so addicted.
Now, the tag refers to what the state issues, right?
Right.
In New York or in Maryland or Virginia.
And you have to put them on
the
fish.
Showing that it's legal fish. It's legal seafood, basically, right?
And I want to say again, I've worked on, as a mate, on three different, they're called, and I believe, a lot of people don't believe this should exist, but it's it's called hook and line fishery. You know, draggers are bad because draggers that drag for bass, they can't discriminate in size. So they and everything that goes, people think that the government. This is an example of how the government is wrong. The government thinks that if you get a big bag of fish, you can throw some back and they'll live. They don't live, so they should be able to take everything. In certain, it's incredibly. The more you learn about it, the more complex it is.
Okay.
You know,
yeah. This guy you met on Long Island, on Montauk. Okay. What did he want you to do?
All right, so he comes out. He goes, just fish with me. And he's a slick guy, funny guy. They're all you know we're attracted to. He's kind of a degenerate, but he's a character. He's dating an Asian massage parlor. I mean, he's just making me laugh. Where I mean, you can't make this stuff up, you know. And he's an idea about bringing these Asian massage girls out to Montauk. So I'm laughing. Okay.
You think he's indoctrinating you into the commercial fishing industry?
Okay, but he's legit. He's got, I have these tags, so we go out. But listen to what happens. Ready? I could be lying, but why would I? You know, I mean, I believe the truth. If you tell the truth, you can say it any way you want, and it's always going to come out. So I go out with this guy. We get stuck in a fog. He doesn't know what he's doing because he's not a traditional Montauk fisherman. He's a transient. He just brought his boat out there from back west, and he was not a Montauk commercial. He wasn't a registered. His boat wasn't even registered. So listen. So we go out. I go out with this guy. It turns out he doesn't have tags. We only catch four fish. It's foggy. We can't get near the other boats. We can't. He takes me in, and he goes, Jeff, take these two coolers of fish down. This is in 03. Take these two coolers of fish down these two coolers to my van. So I'm helping him out. He had me do some other stuff for him too before that seine netting in the harbor. That's the beginning of the book where we took a lot of mullet and sparring out of the harbor, and he'd sell them to Chinatown too. He'd put them in little buckets, little tiny buck canisters, fill them up, mullet, bait fish, sand eels, little shiners, and all in one, and he'd fill up these 20-pound canisters with a traditional net in the harbor at low tide, and
he'd sell those in Chinatown?
Yeah, we'd stack them up in his van, okay. and he'd tell me he'd pay me. He'd be like, listen, I'll give you half. So I'm like, no, just give me $40. It only took 2 hours. They go, I'll give you half. But when he came back, he's like, no, the gas expenses, I couldn't find the right buyer. And he gave me a $20, soggy $20.
So what happened when you took the rockfish, the stripers to his van?
I'm going to his van, right? And this is 03. So I get met. There was a DEC guy.
That's the Department of Environmental Conservation. Thanks.
This guy was so good, he used to terrify it. He would turn the town upside down. This guy was good. He would give his own mom a ticket, this guy. I mean, he was a Boy Scout. And thank God for him. You need more guys like that. All New York Harbor only has 3 DEC enforcement agents. There's no enforcement. It's like Wall Street. You got to have enforcement. You know, I mean, not regulation. I'm against regulation, but some enforcement.
So what happened?
So I get caught up in this thing he goes, Jeff, he knew my name. He comes walking across the parking lot, and I'd heard about this guy because everyone was terrified of this one officer. He comes up to me. 2 cars pull up to me, right? They open the box. He's got 12 striped bass in there with no tags on them. I knew I was innocent. I'm like, look at these fish. You can tell they're old. They're older. Look how red they are. They've been. He caught these days before. They're still iced, and he's gonna, whatever. So, but now the game begins. Now, this is how it works with the DEC. They want you to testify. So now he goes, Jeff, I don't care about this. I want you to testify against Gary, the commercial guy. Mm-hmm. So, Gary goes. But then they go to Gary. They go, Gary, we know you're selling these somewhere to a bigger operation. We want you to testify against them. Then they bust the bigger operation, ideally, and then it goes right to the Fulton Fish Market. They want to bust the Fulton. They want to bust something.
They suspect
big.
That the Fulton Fish Market, where the wholesalers are taking illicit stripers.
I'm not saying that.
That's what they're thinking.
Yeah,
that's what they were theorizing.
But I didn't say that.
Well. You know, since this happened,
I don't want to get shot.
I understand. Many years later,
on a mega bus
in 2011, yeah. 2012, we had these busts in Maryland,
yeah.
where you know, tons of rockfish were found to be poached, right? But we don't know where they were going to take them.
No, they caught a couple, if I remember correctly, in the Baltimore Sun. Thank God for the Baltimore Sun.
We had some people, but there was so much fish, yeah. They weren't sure where it all was going for a period of time.
Sure.
Where do you think it was going?
Well, that's a good question. It's a vast, there was definitely a network set up for it, absolutely. And they did catch a couple big fish markets. But think about it. One illegally submerged gill net in the Chesapeake, I forgot what river or estuary it was, had 3 tons of striped bass. 3 right. tons. That's a massive. Now, I've been to Ohio. I don't see rockfish on the menu. I don't see striped bass on the menu. During the winter, you're not allowed to have striped bass on the menu in New York. So where is this fish going? Is it being shipped overseas? I mean, it's a big question. For that amount of fish, 3 tons in one net. And who knows what else was down there?
I remember that. And yeah. As recently as January, we had the Department of Natural Resources Police in Maryland arresting 2 men for an illegal catch of stripers or rockfish in the Patapsco River, 532 pounds of the fish, more than their daily harvest allotment.
That's bad, but that's nothing compared to 3. How about then?
You cooperate with the Department of Environmental Conservation?
No, I mean, I like the guy Gary, and I just told the truth, like I am now. I go, listen, we caught 4 fish, and he's like, no, I know you know more, and this went on for 2 years, and he phone calls, you know, Jeff, you better tell. Then other fishermen saying you better not talk about anything out here, you know. So I was under a lot of pressure.
Was it clear to you that there was a black market for rockfish or stripers?
Oh, well, this is what happened. So now I'm going through this money. For 2 more years, I'm addicted to trophy fishing. That's all I care about. So I'm not even caring. I started running out of my money. I had so much money, it didn't matter. Then I'm looking at these fish like, wait, that's nice, because it's so expensive to fish. The gas prices are $4 right now. And I'm fishing every night.
And let's tell people what the payoff for the black market stripers are.
Okay.
According to your book, it's like $12 filleted a pound.
Less.
$8 filleted a pound to a restaurant, and $5 for a whole fish per pound.
Well, it's less, though. Less. You're just confusing one thing. Maybe I'm not clear in the book. On a commercial, if you do it legally with mm-hmm. the tags
right.
in New York, at the height of the market, the full fish would get $5 to $6 a pound
okay.
at the best.
Okay.
And fillets would probably be about 10.
Okay. So the lower price is what you could, what the black market.
And that's the problem. Right. So this is, and this is what I had. I had kind of a spiritual awakening eventually, because what's happening is the fish is getting devalued. This important American historical fish. I know I sound like a hypocrite. You know, to be honest with you, I wrote this book too late. If I did, if I had read Dick Russell's book, Striper Wars, in 06, I'm telling you, I would have changed my, I mean, I'm a bit of a scofflaw. I'm not the greatest guy, but I have a connection to a respect for the fish to some degree. I an association. So when I found out, this is what happened. I go to it. Sometimes they only pay you $1 a pound on the black market. So you go to a restaurant and they'll say. So one time this is what happened. I go to this cook. He goes, "I'll give you $1 a pound for these." I'm like, "This fish was swimming 3 hours ago. It's a beautiful, fresh fish." And what they put on the menu, sustainable, fresh, right. Local. They really know right. How to sell it. Just like
$30 an entree.
Sometimes 35. Look at Chilean sea bass, what they did with that. You know, Chilean sea bass is really called a Patagonian dogfish or something. But they put a sexy Mediterranean
name. It's marketing, right?
Right, and it's Chilean, and then it took off in New York. No one liked it at first. It didn't have a great taste. It had a very bland taste, but they put that glaze on it. And Chilean, once they got a market for it, it got wiped out. That's what's happening to striped bass right now.
One point we need to make before the next break is that you had become so obsessed with trophy striper fishing, rockfish fishing, that you saw a way, and you were running out of money, you saw a way of making some money.
Right.
That's how you got involved in the black market.
Yeah, and what I would do, and also I had my charter license, so what I would do is a lot of times I'd make deals like this. I would say, "Okay, guys, you pay me $200, it's normally $500, and I'll keep your fish," and I would go sell them.
Ah, I see. Jeff Nichols, our guest in this hour of the show, Caught is the name of his book, One Man's Maniacal Pursuit of a 60-pound Striped Bass and His Experiences with the Black Market Fishing Industry. This is Midday on WYPR. A short break, and then we'll talk some more. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Roderick's here, our guest in the studio this hour. Jeff Nichols taking a day off from fishing on Long Island for stripers. Down here to talk about his book, his experiences with the black market fishing industry several years ago, but also his obsession with the striped bass, the rockfish, or rock as it's known in Maryland. And the scene that you describe in the book, the opening scene, by this time in your life, you have become so obsessed with fishing and you're running out of money. You need to make money. You're not a licensed charter boat captain yet.
No, I am at that point.
You are at that point?
Yeah. I got my license in 05.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So you at least have a charter license, right?
Yeah.
So you're not completely, what you're doing is not completely illicit. And actually, you don't really do anything wrong, but you take a couple of people out to fish, couple of guys, and you go on some other fisherman's numbers, meaning his longitude, latitude, his section of Long Island, off of Long Island Sound,
That he owns.
Where he takes his customers, right?
Yeah.
And
he was actually a commercial fisherman.
He's a commercial guy. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, so he sees you and he gets really ticked off, right?
Well, this is how I learned to fish, because as I said, no one tells you where the fish are. And back in the day, they used to use land sightings. Like, these guys spent a lot of time to find these spots, because really the big fish are off. They're not in the rips where I almost got killed that first year. They're off on their own, and it's very tough to find exact location. Only the great guys that could land. But they'd say, "Okay, you see that lighthouse over there? Well, we line up with that rock, and we'll be able, and you coincide." And there were certain guys that were great at it. So one guy had this one spot, and he had a GPS spot coordinated, and this is how I got his number. This is how I got good at doing it. I'd wait. But every time I came up to him, he would take off. He would have his guys say, "Put your lines down," but only put them halfway down. And then when I got near him, he'd reel up and drive away, so I couldn't find a spot. Mm-hmm. So I was smart. One time at a full moon, I turned my lights off. This is how bold I was. This is how desperate, because I had only caught a fish 35 pounds. I hadn't broken 40 pounds yet. In my life, to this day, I've probably caught 90 fish over 40 pounds, and only probably 6 or 7 50-pound fish. So, and that's the goal. You want to get a 50-pound. Well, you want to get a 60, which I never got. So this guy, this is how I got the area to fish. I wait. The full moon's out. I turn my lights out. I sneak up on him, and I wait till he hooks up on fish. All three guys, on a commercial guys, hook up on these fish. So what I do is I run up right next to him, because I know he can't move now, because they're fighting fish. I hit my man overboard on my GPS. So I got his coordinates on one side. Then I race around to the other side. I go man overboard. Now I got his location pretty much. I got the area where these rocks are, where these fish are.
I didn't understand that. Why are you doing the man overboard signal?
Oh, because it's what's saving the spot.
It remembers the spot?
Right.
For you?
Longitudinal. Okay. So remember the spot. So I got his secret spot. And this guy was the only guy in Montauk coming in with these huge fish, so I got his spot.
Okay.
Now, this is...
Excuse me. Is there anything illegal about that? He doesn't own that spot,
no,
does he?
No, he doesn't. No,
it's just sort of gentleman's agreement, if there are any
gentlemen.
Yeah,
and it was a sleazy move I made, you know, but it was... Because he could have told me, you know, because he spent years finding that spot.
Okay.
So, but...
And you had customers who were going to pay you money to put them on a 40-pound fish, right?
Yeah, right. So I'm guaranteeing. This is how brazen I get. I got so good at catching... From this guy, I get so good at catching these fish. Here's a guy that I could not catch a fish. I was getting on the front page of all the magazines. Here, unathletic guy, never got cut from JV soccer. You know, I never couldn't get chicks, couldn't get any. I'm on the front page of all these magazines. I'm on the web. I'm catching them every night. I'm catching these big fish. And I'm advertising. I'm guaranteeing. It's a place called the pig hole, we called it. So I'm guaranteeing this. I'm guaranteeing on my website, so the other charter boat captains don't like me. Of course, they don't like me. You know, here I'm a new guy out of New York, and I'm weighing these huge fish. I'm guaranteeing a 40-pound plus fish.
But what happens that night?
A guy in Maryland calls me up. Okay, here we go. They call me up. They want to do a charter with me. Now, this is actually a kind of a separate story because it's the same one. It's the same one. Okay, same one. No, same one. But I don't want to. So I know this area. So I go up. I go all the way to Block Island, because that's where the fish are, and I'm fishing there, and it's a big wide area, right? No one's around. I'm on it's probably 5 miles to fish. No one's around me. I have two customers. I'm borrowing my friend's boat, which is illegal, by the way, so it's not a registered charter boat, because my boat was broken, and I'm fishing, and I'm getting a lot of pressure from other guys too about. You know, charter boats hate me. The commercial guys hate me. Everyone hates me out there already. You know, but I don't care because I want to catch a 60-pounder. So I don't care. When you're in a disease like trying to get heroin, you don't care. You'll do whatever it takes. So I'm out there. These poor guys saw my website, guaranteeing from Maryland. Actually, I'll never forget it. They're out there. We're having a blast. We're catching big fish. All of a sudden, this big commercial boat comes up. Not the guy I took the numbers from, but another guy comes up. He's like, "What are you doing here?" And so I thought he was asking me how we were catching. I'm like, "Well, we're doing all right, kind of small ones." He's like, "No, what are you doing right here?" And I'm like, "Tough. I mean, there couldn't be a tougher guy. You know the type of, he would scare you. He's one of those guys. You know the guys that work with their hands, the clambers and stuff. And he's 300 pounds, a monster of a guy. The cops are scared of him.
What did you say next?
The cops are scared. Well, so he comes right up to me, and the poor customers. But I thought he was being friendly to me. So I'm still saying
customers must have freaked out.
Oh my God, horrible! And I'm in a piece of crap.
So what
boat.
Happened next?
The boat's a piece of junk. Okay, the boat's a piece of junk. I'm in. So he goes, "Listen," he goes. So then I go, "To be honest with you, I've never seen you fish here." And I really meant it. I've never seen him fish that area. There were no other boats around. So because I wasn't. In his area, I didn't know what his area was. It was a different boat. So he goes, and I was being honest. I'm like, "I've never seen you here." He goes, "You know what?" He goes, "I'm going to ram you right here and sink your boat right here." He puts it in reverse and tries to run my, so luckily I get on the throttle and I go lines up. I take off, right? He's got an old Downeaster sport commercial boat. So it's slower. They only
he
go
can't
diesel.
Keep up with
diesel.
You.
He only goes 16. Now I have this piece of junk two-stroke that's old and like an old, polluting, awful boat, but it's a little faster. So we have this race.
Did you make it back to the dock?
I made it back to the dock. I tell the guys. Oh no! Matter of fact, I stopped in Montauk because I go, "Listen, we're still gonna fish, and you don't have to pay me, right?" And believe me, they were trying to act like it was okay, but it was tension, right? So I go, "We're still gonna fish. You're still gonna have a lot of fun and catch fish, but as soon as we see that commercial boat coming over the horizon." As soon as we see that break the horizon, I know what it looks like. We got lines up, and do me a favor. You don't have to pay me. Just get your car. I'm going to put the boat away. So you get your car in a parking lot. This is a very serious situation. This guy's not joking, okay? Because he said he's going to kill me over the radio. He's on the radio. You're dead. I'll have people waiting at the dock. So these poor customers. So I'm trying to say, "Listen, we're still going to," but they wanted to catch fish. So I'm like, and it's almost dark.
I'm thinking of these poor guys from Maryland who paying you to give them a trophy fish. And here they are in the middle of, it's like Somali pirates or something.
It's horrible.
It's like Captain Phillips.
But they're tough guys. Maryland is tough guys because they still wanted to fish.
This guy chased you to the dock?
No, no. We're fishing off Montauk. So I say, so it's about 8 o'clock. It's almost dark. So when the sun goes down, I know he's coming in. So sure enough, I see him come around the horizon. I say, we're going, lines up. We fly back, right? I go to put the boat away. Those guys, they play along. They're good guys. They play along. They get their car. I'm trying to put the boat away, but it's
now the getaway car.
It's the getaway car, right? And I say, just drop me off anyway. Just get me out of this town. Put me to a bus station, mega bus. Put me to put me in the LIE. Put me, just drop, get me the hell out of
so
here.
So you fled Montauk.
I fled Montauk. Yo, but this is better than this. I'm trying to put the boat away, but it's high tide, so I can't get the last rope around. And then the commercial guy's coming in with his, he's got the light looking for me, oh right? He's got the light, and I can't get the, I'm trying, it's not, I would have just left. It was my boat. It was my friend's boat, so I'm trying to get the last spring line. It's like a horror movie, like Friday the 13th, when Jason's after you, or whatever, and the shirt's stuck in a barbed wire. So I finally, this guy has been arrested several times, criminal background. So I get the last line on. I knew the guy's background, and I just go running down the dock. The spotlight's on me as I'm running down the dock. I jump in the car. I say, "Hit it," you know. And he drove me back.
And the two guys from Maryland drove you to a bus station.
They drove me all the way to Ronkonkoma bus station. I got down there. I sat down in my Park Avenue apartment. I'm broke. I smell like fish. I'm broke. My girlfriend had left me, broken up with me. She said, "You fish too much. You smell like fish. You're a loser." I have no money left. I'm sitting there. This guy is going to kill me. I know he's going to kill me. So I'm sitting there. I go to my neighbor. He's 88-year-old neighbor. I know he has a gun, right? I knock on his door. I go, "Listen, I need to borrow your gun." He goes, he's this cagey guy, World War II guy. You know, he goes, "You're not going to eat the barrel, are you?" You know, I go, "No,
he was worried about you."
Yeah, yeah. I go, "I need it for the fish." So that was, yeah.
Well, Jeff Nichols, I need to ask you this. That fisherman who chased you that night,
yeah,
the commercial guy,
right?
And you're back on Montauk, right? You're doing charter boat fishing now.
Well, it's yes, it's I've
2014.
Plenty, and I have openings for this season.
I know.
Please call in.
But does that guy know you?
Are you going to come with me?
Do you ever see that guy anymore?
I'd rather not discuss that.
Okay.
But we've come to
a separate piece.
Yeah, because the, yeah it came yeah it, because yeah it did.
You know, we only have a couple minutes left now because the hour flew by here. You're still running charters.
Yes.
You practice catch and release?
Only catch and release. And we videotape
and
it.
Your epiphany on catch and release versus killing giant fish?
I have a GoPro. Well, I realize that the big fish are very important for various reasons. First of all, the meat's not that good on them. They have a lot of PCBs from going up in the Hudson, and they a lot of it. And the fish is under a lot of stress because the Chesapeake is polluted. They have something called microbacteriosis. They're getting these scars. Right. So the fish is under a lot of stress. The big fish are important because they've survived. They're breeders. They're the top of the food chain. They know how to get around the nets and stuff. So that you want to keep that in the gene pool. You want to have them reproduce. So there's no point.
So how long would you say you've been this way?
It's three years ago when I started writing this. So I've been doing catch and release ever since then. And it's been, and also I just knew it was getting devalued. $1 a pound is not worth it, you know, because think of a 30-pound fish, they're trying to get for $15, you know, in Chinatown, where a thing of processed frozen burger meat goes for, you know.
And you see the importance of governments, local governments, federal government, whatever it is. I know you said some things about the government, but the government needs to regulate the catch, the commercial and the recreational catch in all these areas. Do you agree with that?
Not so much regulated.
They need to set limits on how much
regulate.
You can catch.
You need funding, and I'll probably get shot for saying it.
No, limits on what you can catch.
Yeah, limits.
You agree with
that? But if there's no enforcement, why have limits?
No. I'm all for enforcement. I'm all for limits,
too, personally. It's like Wall Street. Wall Street has regulations, but if there's no enforcement, the hedge funds are going to destroy America because they do whatever they want to do.
Well, they're underfunded. They're underfunded. The Natural Resources Police and probably every state that enforces these laws are probably underfunded.
Drastically.
And that's why we see the poaching we see. But there has been a crackdown on it.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show,
Jeff.
Yeah,
it was fun. Thanks for having me, Dan.
Yeah, boy, you've had quite a life and quite an experience. And this is a self-published book, but your last book was self-published and was made into a movie.
We'll see what happens with this one.
The last scene you described about being chased by Captain Quint sounds like it could be made into a movie, too, couldn't it?
At secondchoichecharters.com.
That's your company?
Yeah.
Second Choice Charters.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you're not scared of gunfire, book me.
And all right. Thank you very much, Jeff. Jeff Nichols, with a foreword by Zach Harvey in this. And I noticed a blurb on the back from Zach Galifianakis, too.
Yeah.
Caught is the name of Jeff's book, One Man's Maniacal Pursuit of a 60-Pound Striped Bass and His Experiences with the Black Market Fishing Industry. Still looking for that 60-pounder, aren't you?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, thank
you
very much.
On my GoPro camera. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me down.
We're going to take a break for lunch now, folks. That's the first hour of midday. Lunch brought to us today by Atwaters. Atwaters supports local radio, local farmers, and local appetites. Mm-hmm. Located at Belvedere Square, the shops at Kenilworth, Bear Hills, or Main Street, Catonsville. Visit atwaters.biz for more information. That's our first hour. Please stay tuned for the news from NPR, and then we'll see you for the second half of Midday.